Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Oneview Healthcare Annual Results Presentation. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. James Fitter, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Jennifer. Good morning, everyone. A very warm welcome wherever you may be listening from. Joining me, as usual today, is our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. John Kelly. I have apologies from Michael Klosky, our President and Founder, who'd normally be here but is traveling on business in the United States. Hopefully, you have seen that we've received a copy of this presentation, a distributed copy of the presentation to the ASX. We're going to talk through. I'll be referring to slide numbers that the call is being recorded, so it should help you keep track going forward if you haven't got the presentation in front of you. Let's start with the preliminary financial results for 2018 and the highlights. Total revenue was up 30% to 8.2 million euro, which is at the upper end of the guidance that we released on the 26th of October last year. That guidance, just as a reminder, was 7.5 million-8.5 million. Our recurring revenue was up 35% to 3.4 million euros, which is at the very top of the range we announced in October. Importantly, our live beds are up 75% year-over-year to 6,258. Our contracted beds are up 20% to 10,710. And we finished the year with the strongest quarter we've ever had in terms of customer receipts, with record receipts of 3.5 million euros for the fourth quarter, which was 40% better than the previous corresponding period. Next slide just talks about the progress we've made against the key initiatives. I think you'll all be aware that we announced on the 7th of November a very significant strategic review of the business. The changes that we announced took effect on the 1st of December, so there's only 1 month of benefit of those changes in these numbers. But just to remind everyone, the decisions that were taken were to reduce the existing product portfolio from four products, inpatient, senior living, pathways, and connect, to two products only, being inpatient and senior living. New feature development on connect was suspended for 12 months, with that mobile application to converge with our inpatient product. So we're still running that product at the Sydney Children's Hospital Network, where we still have 7,500 families using that application, and we're very grateful for the partnership at Sydney Children's and their decision to keep working with us despite the suspension of new feature development. We also announced plans to seek a strategic partner to fund the development of the Pathways product, which we'll update you on today. And we reduced the size of our board of directors from nine members to five, which we felt was more in keeping with a company of our size. And the benefits of that have been very significant. Firstly, and perhaps most importantly, they've really sharpened the focus of the business. We've had universally positive feedback from customers. As I said, notwithstanding the decision with connect, we continue to have a fabulous relationship with Sydney Children's and are looking forward to expanding our inpatient footprint with them over the course of 2019. We announced targeted cost savings of nearly 4 million euro, which is 18% of OpEx. We'll give you a bit of an update on that today. It's allowed us to really accelerate innovation on the inpatient product and our senior living business, which we'll be talking about in some detail. And important to remind everyone, we still have a 100% retention rate with our customers. In terms of operational highlights on the next slide, as I said, we've had the strategic review. We've very importantly got our first Gen 3 Android customers live at NYU Langone and BJC HealthCare in New York and St. Louis, respectively. We won our inaugural inpatient contract in the medical tourism markets with Bumrungrad in Thailand. We got our inaugural senior living customer live here in Australia. Very importantly, just after year-end, we have signed our first enterprise senior living contract in the United States with Christian Living. We were the recipient of one of only five recipients of Microsoft's Global Innovation Award for connect. We have follow-on expansion business booked with six of our customers, as you can see detailed here, with UCSF, with Mediclinic, the Chris O'Brien Lifehouse, Sydney Kids, and BJC HealthCare. And importantly, we extended and expanded the footprint at the Chris O'Brien Lifehouse for a further 6 years, but are also deploying our clinical applications there for the first time, which is a major step forward in terms of that deployment. In terms of funding and capital, we ended 2018 with $9.3 million of cash. As I said, we're very encouraged by the early impact of the strategic review, for which we really only enjoyed 1 month's benefit in 2018. We are seeing and continue to enjoy pent-up demand for new feature delivery with our existing inpatient customers, and that's been a very important message for us as we continue to innovate. I don't think we have a customer anywhere in the world that hasn't got a wish list of new functionality that they'd like us to deploy, and the reorganization is helping us to do that. As I mentioned, our first senior living customer, Thomas Holt, is live in Australia, and the recent contract success in the US market is very, very encouraging. We have significant engagement with a very diverse group of senior living operators, and we think the spotlight of the Aged Care Royal Commission in Australia is very important and is certainly encouraging us to accelerate product development in senior living. We're also happily seeing more agile decision-making process from senior living operators. I think major health systems, as we've talked about in the past, are incredibly complex organizations. We would often find ourselves in situations where we'd be presenting to a group of 25 or 30 executives as part of a decision-making process. That tends to be a smaller audience in senior living where we have three or four key decision-makers. So we expect to see more agile decision-making, a shorter sales cycle, which is critical, and we have evidence of that with our first success at Christian Living. We are, on the back of the strong buying signals we're seeing in senior living, we are seeking fresh funding to capitalize on that growth. Notwithstanding the material improvements in the cash flow from the strategic review, we are currently working with our advisors to evaluate a number of alternative funding strategies that will strengthen our balance sheet and allow us to pursue these opportunities. On slide 8, you can see the very material reductions in operating expenses. The chart on the left-hand side we shared with the most recent 4C, which shows a dramatic narrowing in our cash outflows versus our customer receipts. And there you can see that 40% growth in the fourth quarter in terms of customer receipts. And then on the total OPEX on the right-hand side, you can see that we are targeting OPEX to be nearly 31% below 2017 levels. So we've really helped to focus the business on the back of the strategic review. In terms of the outlook for 2019, we now have a very strong client base, enhanced visibility of demand amongst those customers that's more predictable. We have a much better understanding, I think, of the enterprise decision-making process that I referred to earlier. And most importantly, we have very solid pipelines of potential new business, both for inpatient and senior living. So accordingly, we are anticipating revenue growth for 2019 in the range of 40% to 50% above 2018. And this guidance is, you know, predicated on three key drivers, as I'm sure you can appreciate. One is our recurring revenue growth, which is highly predictable, and we have very good visibility on. The second is the installation of our existing contracts, which are obviously dependent on customer readiness, but we have a very strong plan of deployment scheduled for 2019. And thirdly, of course, new orders, which we are very confident about, but obviously we can't guarantee those all landing in 2019. But we certainly feel very comfortable putting this range into the market. Slide 10 is just highlighting the business drivers to break even. We'll talk in a second about the significant pool of contract bids that we have going live in 2019. Android Gen 3 is going to accelerate sales on the back of the lower hardware prices. We have very significant expansion opportunities with our existing customers. And I think it's really important to highlight that market penetration in this space is still in its infancy, and we're going to share some data with you from HIMSS. HIMSS is the Healthcare Information and Management System Society in the United States. It's an American not-for-profit organization that's dedicated to improving healthcare in quality, safety, cost effectiveness, and access, and really is one of the leading voices in the market. And they poll their members each year to get senses around their buying intentions for different aspects of healthcare technology, and have begun collecting data around patient engagement, which we're going to share with you shortly. As I mentioned, we have very significant momentum in the senior living business, a very strong tailwind from the aged care reform. We feel like we have a very well right-sized cost base and again, 100% customer renewals. So let's just turn to the inpatient business specifically. And on slide 12, you can see that we now have 6,258 beds live. We have a further 4,452 that are contracted but not yet live. And clearly, just in the process of deploying those beds is going to deliver us very material growth, approximately 70% growth in recurring revenue, and we would anticipate that the vast majority of those beds will be live in calendar 2019. Slide 13 shows the key operating metrics of the business, which is a slide you will be familiar with the natural flow here from right to left, and you can see that live and installed bed, which is obviously the key driver of our revenue. And the important thing to highlight here is the contract negotiation category, where we've seen 96% growth over the year and have just shy of 10,000 beds in that category. In the United States, we have a very important footprint of customers that also have a significant potential to expand. And I think this is obviously the path of least resistance to new business. These guys obviously know us, they know our product, we know them, we know their enterprise infrastructure, we obviously have live beds with them today already and see a very significant opportunity to expand. And we now have a dedicated relationship management sales organization that is focused on that opportunity and accordingly incented to help convert those beds as we move forward. Slide 15 is just a reminder of who our customer partners are around the world. We're contracted now with 55 hospitals. This is obviously the biggest asset we have is the quality of our relationships around the world. And we're very proud to include three of the top 15 ranked health systems in Australia and a series of market leaders, three of the top 15 in the United States, I should say, and a series of market leaders here in Australia. So that is a great credit and a testament to the product. Slide 16 is just going to share a few stats around the impact that our technology is having. I think for those of you that have been fortunate enough to see the product in action, it is very powerful. We're now impacting over 500,000 patient lives a year. We're pushing 750,000 pieces of educational content, ordering nearly 200,000 meals electronically. We have 22 types of non-clinical service requests, which no longer interrupt nursing staff. And I can't emphasize enough how important that is, because this is freeing up nursing to allow them to focus on what matters most, which is dealing with their patients, not dealing with menial requests. We've had nearly 30,000 minutes of video remote interpretation, and we currently run our solution in 15 languages around the world. And I can't stress enough the power of being welcomed when a patient presents at a OneView hospital. Obviously, any time you're presenting a hospital is a time of high anxiety, but to be welcomed in your home language is an incredibly important step in improving patient experience and something that has been a great satisfier. Slide 17, I had the pleasure of attending a very high-profile healthcare conference in San Francisco in January, where I was fortunate enough to see nearly 20 U.S. healthcare CEOs present and talk about their vision for their brand. We've seen massive consolidation amongst U.S. hospitals in recent years, and they all emphasize that this notion of treating patients as consumers is the very clear trend in the industry. And we really have the tools that allow that experience to happen. We're providing the ability to provide convenience and control and effectively put patients in command in their inpatient setting. We can distract and calm them as part of their recovery. We can measure and manage their patient experience. And most importantly, we can optimize the discharge process for them as well. So it's a very broad suite of functionality. The second thing that really resonated was that on the back of the material consolidation in the United States, there is a lot of rebranding of major health systems going on. Our solution allows them to promote their brand at the patient bedside, and particularly as many of our customers are managing multiple facilities with different use cases, we can control the brand across the enterprise. For example, we can have a very different a set of branding in a pediatric setting than we would in an acute adult setting. And that's something that's very powerful. And of course, the investment we've made in Android, which has been a very material investment, is giving us a scalable infrastructure and allowing us a lower cost of entry, which is very important. Slide 18 just talks to the HIMSS analytics data, which I mentioned earlier. This is from their technology snapshot that they published last year, which shows at the bottom right-hand side of this chart, you can see that patient experience and engagement solutions are currently deployed in less than 15% of US hospitals. What particularly encouraged us from this survey they did of their members was that nearly 100 US hospitals have demonstrated that they have a high likelihood to buy patient engagement solutions for the first time in 2019. And it's important to note that this data has only been collected by him since 2016, but it's very helpful for us in our market segmentation work. On slide 19, you can see the journey that we have spoken about in the past, which is our transition from a Windows client to an Android client, an initiative that was really driven by our customers. You can see that up until 2018, all of our hospitals were Windows hospitals. We have now deployed our first three Android clients, as I mentioned, at NYU, BJC, and we've just turned on a few beds at the Mater in Brisbane, but we'll be expanding with them throughout the course of 2019. And you can see that that Android refactoring was a significant investment for the business for the last 2 years. I think we've acknowledged in the past that it took longer than we anticipated, but we're now really positioned to enjoy the benefits of that investment going forward. Slide 20 just talks to the reduction in hardware prices, which are material, at least 47%. This clearly dramatically improves the ROI and the business case for the customer. And I should also mention that obviously, as all of our new feature development is now going to be on our Gen 3 Android platform, we're in the process with working with our existing Windows customers to migrate all of them across to Android over the course of 2019 and 2020, which will involve a hardware refresh for those customers. So I now turn to the senior living business and wanted to start just with a little bit of a thought around the Aged Care Royal Commission, which is obviously a very high profile here in Australia. And the reason that we're enthused about it is not because of the level of care that has been called into question in certain instances, but really around the future of care. And we see two of the seven terms of reference really align very closely to our care management platform and our vision. The two references are how to ensure that aged care services are person-centered, including allowing people to exercise greater choice, control, and independence in relation to their care, and improving engagement with families and carers on care-related matters. And secondly, how best to deliver aged care services in a sustainable way, including through innovative models of care, increased use of technology, and investment in the aged care workforce and capital infrastructure. And I think that really plays to our strengths and sits in our wheelhouse. On slide 24, I beg your pardon, I just wanted to talk about the investment, or part of the investment we've been making in the development of this product. We're thrilled to have been collaborating with Dr. Joan Cahill, who is a research fellow and principal investigator at the Centre for Innovation in Human Systems at the School of Psychology in Trinity College in Dublin. Joan has been working with us since September 2016, leading a research study into the assisted living industry and how seniors like to interact with technology. And I think it's really important to understand that resident-centered design is a crucial pillar of this. Residents in senior living have very different needs and preferences to patients in hospitals. And the collaboration that Joan and her colleagues at OneView have been working on really is very expansive in scope. They've published over a dozen publications since Joan joined in this initiative and have had a very important document recently peer-reviewed and published in Switzerland, which I've referred to here. So we're going to have Joan come and present a webinar to shareholders next week, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a second, but I just wanted to emphasize the amount of thought that has gone into the design of that product. I just want to talk to a couple of those issues now. I don't want to steal Joan's thunder for next week, so I'll keep my comments reasonably brief. But on slide 26, you can see the wellness indicators that are really at the heart of Joan's work. She is her work is predicated on this concept of biological, psychological, and social pillars of wellness, and how can we use technology to make sure that residents are inclusive in their community, both from a social point of view as well as a biological and psychological perspective. So we're sharing these traffic light wellness indicators with the care team and family members to give a sense as to how residents are doing. So the smart rooms have a resident tablet, which allows the resident to ask some very simple questions about how they're feeling today, how did they sleep last night, and that gives an immediate indication to the care team as to the mood and wellness of that resident. We can obviously track that information on a daily basis to improve their experience and really direct the care team at the appropriate time to assist in their journey. In terms of promoting well-being, we're trying to encourage residents to communicate with their friends and family. Isolation is obviously a fairly significant issue. They can see the community schedule, they can access concierge services, control their own calendar, control their room environment, order their meals, see their medication, and assess clinical goals and education as they move forward. So very significant opportunities to drive resident well-being. Perhaps more important is the addition, the ability to support care teams. And this is very consistent with the work that we're doing through our nurse rounding application with many of our Australian customers, which allows those customers to measure the level of care that is being delivered to their patients, or in this case, to the residents. So at Epworth in Melbourne, we're using biometrics to monitor every time any member of the care team presents in the room. They authenticate with biometrics. We get transparency and visibility around the level of care that's being delivered. And I think this is something that has got huge application in the senior living space. We also want to help shift from reactive to predictive care. What that means is using wearables and sensors to get a better understanding of risk with the resident in the room. The most obvious example is the ability to measure if a resident's getting out of bed at night to go to the bathroom, typically for 5 or 6 minutes. If tonight they're out for an extended period of time, we can send an alert to the care team. So it's about looking at that pattern recognition, identifying unusual behavior that might help alert care teams to channel their workflow and prioritize their workflow in a more predictable manner. And I think that's incredibly powerful. In terms of engaging families, I think we all are aware of the isolation and the loneliness that can accustom residents in senior living. We want to try and solve for that by helping family members and loved ones get a sense of what level of care is being delivered to our loved ones, how engaged are they in their community activities, and provide that information on a simple mobile application that we would be accustomed to in our daily lives. So giving that visibility and transparency is incredibly important. It obviously requires the resident to control permissions. It's notification-based, and it's built largely along the same lines of the work we've done with Connect. But we see that as a highly impactful tool for family members. So as I mentioned, next Tuesday, we are going to have Joan Cahill and Sean McLaughlin, who's our product manager for senior living, give shareholders the opportunity to have a live demo of the product. That'll be scheduled for 8:30 next Tuesday. We're conscious that many of our shareholders haven't had exposure to the product. And I think to get a sense of the work that Joan's been doing and how Sean and his team are transferring that vision into the product will be incredibly impactful. So please join us for that if you're available. Pathways, as we mentioned as part of the strategic review, we have sought a strategic partner to help take this project to fruition. We've gone through a fairly exhaustive progress of outreach, both with ourselves and with the assistance of Oxford. We've identified a number of partners which have been shortlisted, and we have some very interesting conversations going on. We hope to finalise this deal by the third quarter of this year. And needless to say, any proceeds from the sale of that business would be reinvested in the core products. So why don't I pause there and hand it across to John to talk a little further about the financials.
Thank you, James. On slide 38, we present OneView's income statement for the period to 31 December 2018. At the outset, please note that while our audit is substantially complete, these do represent preliminary numbers, and KPMG, our auditors, are yet to present their final audit opinion, which will accompany the annual report at the end of March. Revenue was reported for the period at 8.2 million, an increase of 30% on prior year. Within this, recurring revenue growth shows 35% growth over the corresponding period, with non-recurring revenue growth of 26%. Importantly, salary costs in the period have decreased to 15.4 million from 17 million the prior year, a decrease of 9%, which is in line with our headcount reductions from an average this year, or in 2018, of 153 down from 167, which represents a corresponding 8% decrease. But importantly, following our announcement in November, our year-end headcount has decreased from 162 at December 17 to 133 at December 18, which is an 18% decrease. Costs will continue to trend downwards following the reorganisation announced effective December 2018. Salaries and travel, as previously mentioned in prior presentations, represent about 85% of our total overhead. Rent and directors' expenses in going forward will also be materially lower following the reorganisation announced last November. 2018 shows net finance costs, which represent foreign exchange gain of 270,000, but this compares to an unrealized foreign exchange loss in the prior year of 1.74 million. Over the page on 39, we show a positive trend in our business mix. 2016, the year of our IPO. Recurring revenue represented, as highlighted in green, represented 17% of our total revenue, whereas today it now represents 42% of our total revenue, which is a very positive trend. On the right-hand side there, we present recurring revenue from 2015 through to 2018, and as you can see, we've achieved a compound annual growth rate of 54.6% in our recurring revenues. On page 40, we present our balance sheet. Closing balance sheet at December 18 shows net assets of 9.93, including cash on hand of 9.33 million. On page 41, we present our cash flow for the business. As noted by James previously, we in our fourth quarter 4C, we reported record cash collections of 3.5 million. And important to note in our cash flow here is that they reflect only 1 month's benefit of previously announced reductions, which really only came into force effective the beginning of December 2018. Finally, on page 42, we present a summary of our Appendix 4Cs since our IPO. And as you can see there in green, you can see a very positive trend here, where our net cash utilized in the business has been reduced to, in the last quarter, to 2.5 million, which compares with an average since the IPO of 5.165 million. Thank you very much. I'll hand you back to James.
All right, that concludes our official remarks, and we'd be delighted to take any questions from the floor.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Scott Hudson from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, James and John. Just a couple of questions for me. I guess in relation to the various funding options that you're exploring, could you maybe just expand on, I guess, sort of what options you're considering and maybe where you're sort of leaning most heavily at this point?
Look, I don't want to be drawn on a final outcome. I think we obviously are working very closely with our advisors to consider a number of different options. We also obviously want to take the liberty of consulting with our major stakeholders over the next couple of days to share, to learn their preferences. But I think that's as much as I'd like to say on it at this stage.
Okay, and then just in relation to the 4 million euros of savings that you're highlighting for calendar year 19, is there any of that saving in the 18 operating expense number, or is that all to flow through in 19 alone?
But very little. As John mentioned, we really only put those changes into effect on the 1st of December. So the vast majority of that benefit is coming through in 2018.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Chris Cahill from Quest Asset Partners. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, James. Further to Scott's question, slide 42, are you heading for a net cash figure of zero? Have you got a target here?
Look, obviously, that's the objective, Chris, and it's going to depend. You know, we're really pleased with the progress we've made to date. I think that's evident from slide 42. And the pace is going to determine around the timing of the new live beds, which, as you'll recall, has a very material impact on cash flow, because when we deploy, we're paid annually in advance for those beds. As you saw from the earlier slide, we have a very busy schedule of deployments with the new Android solution this year. So, yes, we're certainly expecting a material pickup on the receipt side, and we've obviously made some difficult decisions on the cost side, which we think are going to leave us in good stead.
Okay, it seems there's not a long list of questions, so I've got to ask another one. Yeah, in the past, you've talked up Connect and Pathways, and it seems they've been shelved, and now the focus is very much on supporting care teams and the new phase of the business. I just wonder if you could elaborate on that a little more, of why it gets so many slides. It seems it's the sixth fishing line over out of the side of the boat, and it's the latest idea, but why can shareholders have more faith that this can actually convert to revenue?
Sure. Well, I think a number of things. First of all, we've got our first contract win in the United States with Christian Living. We have been building this product for the last, you know, since the IPO, and we are in very active conversations with the largest operators in Australia who I think are seeking options in this space. And I think the glare of the Royal Commission is incredibly helpful, because it's highlighting, I think, the technology. I mean, staffing levels are clearly going to be a very hot issue. And I think the ability to use technology as a way to help drive more efficient use of staff in caring for residents is going to be a really important part of that equation. And that's a space where we've enjoyed very strong success in our inpatient product. So we in fact are being encouraged by senior living operators to accelerate our product development and move that product to market as fast as we possibly can, which is a key focus for the business. And it's also about the size of the addressable market. I think we all understand that the healthcare market is a very large industry. There's over 20 million hospital beds in the world. And in this space, there's 2.5 to 3 times, depending on which data you're looking. So the addressable market is much larger. The unit size of the operators is much larger. And the agility of their decision making, we think, is going to be much more favourable.
And could I ask, what do you think is the elapsed time from finalising a contract? I mean, Thomas Holt has taken a long time, but it's the first cab off the rank.
Yep.
What should we expect as an elapsed time from contract to initiation?
So Christian Living, which was announced in January, will be deployed this year. So, and importantly, you know, when we think about sales cycle, the Christian Living sales cycle was less than 8 months. We have a number of major health systems in the United States who we've been talking to for two or three years. So it's a very material difference in sales cycle. So you would expect to see Christian Living live this year. And I think based on some of the conversations we're having with other operators, I think you'll see other Australian operators live this year.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jeffrey Simmons from GLS Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. James, I was hoping you could just talk us through some of the tendering process and the bids submitted in 17 and 18. And I think in previous discussions, your success rate when you tendered was very high.
Yep.
So maybe you could run us through what happened during calendar 18 in terms of, the tenders submitted in 17.
Yeah, absolutely. So the primary driver of the fall in the tenders that have been submitted is the fact that a number of them have moved into contract negotiation. So slide 13, which I think you're referring to, shows a natural progression from right to left. So at any given moment of time, we can receive an RFP or an RFI. Obviously, as that process matures, we get selected as a preferred vendor and move into contract negotiation. And I should also stress it's important to understand that not all institutions go through an RFI or an RFP process. It's certainly very common in the public sector where there's a legal obligation to do so. But there are a number of conversations that are happening outside of that remit.
Right, but if you look at the 12,990 beds that you were submitting or preparing to submit a tender for in 17.
Yep.
Have the bulk of them been decided on, do the negotiations go out for a few years? Have you been rejected from a lot of them? what's the state of play?
Yeah, it's a good question. And as you're probably aware, that there are very strict rules around. You know, you have to submit your bid by 5 p.m. on the closing date of the submission, but there's no reciprocity. The bidding organization reserves the right to get back to you at their leisure. And certainly some of those requests turn out to be voyeurism, or it turns out that the organization couldn't get budget to execute on their plan. So there are varying different states that those may sit in, and they may lie fallow for a period of time and then be reignited once they have budget.
Okay. So, but of those 12,900 beds, how many are sort of still in play, if you will, or how many have you won or how many have you not won?
Yeah, they're all still in play.
They're all still in play.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So
I should also stress that. Yeah, and what I should also stress, Jeff, is that the beds that we refer to with our existing customers are not in those numbers. So there's a further 5,200 opportunity set, if you like, where they're not in RFP or RFI. They've already chosen us as the vendor, but they could, at any given point in time, depending on their budgetary needs, decide to increase their footprint.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Scott Hudson from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so just a couple of follow-ups. In relation to the 40 to 50% revenue guidance that you've provided,
yep.
How much of that is... I guess a flow through of recurring revenue streams that started in sort of calendar year 18, and how much of it is reliant, I guess, on the timing of deployments and or new contract wins?
Okay, so a lot of it is obviously, let's put it this way, the majority of that business is either recurring business that we know is going to happen, or contracted business that we know we're going to deploy.
There's not the vast majority is contracted and recurring revenue streams already in train. There's
correct.
Not much that's reliant on new
there's very contract. Little very little blue sky in that number.
Okay, great. And then just in terms of the quarterly cash flow number, the I guess the improvement that we saw in the fourth quarter, that was mostly due to improved revenue generation as opposed to cost reduction?
A little bit of both. Obviously, the cost reduction, as John mentioned, really only kicked in for the month of December. So we'd expect to see further material gains in that in the Q1.
And is the, I guess, the revenue generation, that 40 to 50%, is there any sort of lumpiness associated with that, or is it a fairly even trajectory through the year?
Well, the only thing we qualify is that hardware, obviously, as we experienced last year, can come in lumps, and whether it lands one side of year end or half year as the last point, I think you might recall the last half year we had a significant hardware drop of the new Android hardware for a customer here in Australia that got delayed, which impacted that. So there's obviously lumpiness around the hardware number.
And then lastly, just in terms of, I guess, the Royal Commission into aged care, does that sort of put a hiatus on decision-making processes while that goes on, or is it a...
We haven't seen any evidence of that. On the contrary, I think people are looking for solutions that they may not have currently in order to get out in front of it.
And is the time of deployment in aged care any different to...
Yeah, it's actually faster.
I mean, in innovation?
Yeah, it's cloud-hosted. So two elements to bear in mind is that there are two clear aspects of the senior living business. One is the resident management platform, which is what we're primarily delivering for Christian Living in the United States. And the second aspect is the care management platform, which are providing the tools to allow carers and staff members to measure and record the level of care that's being delivered. And that's obviously a faster deployment. The latter is a faster deployment because you're not deploying hardware in every resident's room. You're deploying tablets to the workforce to allow them to manage their workflow. So that's a very easy and rapid deployment compared to inpatient.
And how does the capital cost of senior living compare to inpatient?
It's lower because you're not going to have a single tablet per room. It's going to be a shared tablet experience on the care management side. On the resident-facing side, it would be well lower than the 1500. It's essentially just a tablet in a room. It's cloud hosted, so again, it'll be lower and faster to deploy.
Thanks. And just the last one is the I guess the inpatient bedside table. Is that the rollout progressing?
Yes, it is, and it's a good point. So just for those that are not as familiar, one of the challenges in deploying technology in any patient room is how do we install the device. So historically, we have typically deployed the tablet on an articulated arm in the room, and the reason for that is the tablet needs to be powered and it needs to be secured. What that means is that for many hospitals, having to go in and retrofit and install an arm, particularly in labor or union labor markets in the United States, the cost of deploying that arm could be as much as $1,000 a room. What we've seen more recently and what we've deployed at NYU and at Lancaster General are patient engagement tables where the tablet is mounted on effectively on what is the meal table and is simply wheeled into the room. So that is a dramatic saving for the hospital and takes away the headache of having to put construction workers into the hospital room.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Fitter for closing remarks.
Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks, everyone, for your time. John and I are in Australia until the middle of next week. We'll be in Melbourne on Monday If anyone would like to schedule a follow-up, certainly encourage you to do that. And I would really encourage those that have the time to participate in the webinar on Tuesday morning, because I think it will really help bring the senior living product to life. So thanks all for your interest, and we'll look forward to hearing from you.